welcome back to this session of observations. We're going to pick up where we left off last night in the Blog Talk Radio Yada Yada program, but that was actually a bit of a retreat from where we were in this program a week ago, which is right around Proverbs 7-8. But before I do, I would be remiss if I didn't share an item that just came across the news wires. Another professor, another writer, has been hacked to death with machetes in Bangladesh. Muslims have routinely, and it seems to happen like every 3 or 4 months, they single a author or professor out, and they attack the defenseless individual with axes, swords, and machetes. Now, first of all, to hack someone to death requires somebody being so perverse, so despicable, so inhuman, is that the whole world should be screaming, what drives someone to this deplorable condition? And when the common denominator is always the same, Islam, the same religion that ties people up and slits their throats, well, shouting Allahu Akbar and citing Quran verses, the whole world ought to be disgusted by a religion that would drive people to this state. But it gets worse. This man was hacked to death because he was promoting atheist ideas, according to the Islamic State in Bangladesh. He's not even an atheist. His activities were to sponsor music productions and to review music performances. And it gets worse than that. Last week, the prime minister of this disgusting Muslim hellhole known as Bangladesh issued a stern warning to anyone who criticized his religion. I don't consider such writings as free thinking, but as filthy words. Why would anyone write such words? It's not acceptable if anyone writes against our prophet. God, it makes me sick. First of all, Muhammad was not a prophet. And second of all, his Quran is the filthiest, most repulsive document ever attributed to God. And to say that you can't criticize him when he was a pedophile, when he was a rapist, when he was a terrorist, when he was a slave trader, when he was a mass murderer, says that you are so warped, so twisted by religion, so empowered by that religion, that you've lost all sense of human decency. Now, that's my thoughts.
Yeah. And when the Western world reports on something like that, does anyone ever beg the question, I mean, what then can you criticize if you can't criticize Muhammad?
For example, you know, when Muslims butchered the people associated with Charlie Hebdo because they drew a cartoon showing that that Muhammad was an inspiration for Islamic terrorism. And there are idiots in the West so deprived of reason, so deprived of morality, that said, you know, they shouldn't be doing that. That's hateful. You know, that they had no right to criticize another religion's prophet. Let's say that Muhammad really was a nice guy. Now, he was the antithesis of that. Muhammad was the ultimate perverted scumbag. There is no one in all of human history who is as vile as Muhammad. He was absolutely the worst of the worst. I mean, you can't be worse than pedophilia unless it's rape. And he was engaged in rape and pedophilia and sadistic tortures. And of the 75 terrorist raids he led, every single one of them was against civilians. He was a ruthless and despicable terrorist. And to suggest that holding him and the religion that he conceived accountable for the enslavement and gang rape of little girls around the world, and of the fact that they inspire 99% of the world's terrorist acts, to say that you ought not hold Muhammad and Islam accountable for that, and that if you write the truth about Islam, you ought to be gunned down or butchered to death, you've got it coming, just shows you how far politicians and journalists have fallen the world over.
It's incomprehensible that, okay, if somebody says he's a terrorist, and then you go kill him,
right,
innocent people, and then they blame you. That's so insane.
You know, I have a real affinity for the actual God. His name is Yahweh, as you guys know.
Yes.
And I do not care. It would bother me not in the least if my next-door neighbor or a fellow on a street corner or the professor of a university or the president of the United States went on a tirade to demean and discredit Yahweh. Wouldn't bother me in the least. That idiot's view of Yahweh doesn't affect who he is, doesn't affect what I know of him, doesn't affect my relationship with him. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't even give the person the time of day. And to think that if you were a Muslim and someone actually told the truth about your wannabe prophet, that your response would be to hack them to death and to celebrate it, to take credit for it.
Prove the point of what you are.
I'll make one addendum to what you just said, just for myself personally.
Yeah.
If they take who he is and they change it and then they lead people astray, that bothers me. The Roman Catholic Church has done that for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
That bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I've never wanted to hack anybody to death. I've never wanted to do anything.
You know, I don't care that the Roman Catholic Church outlawed the use of Yahweh's name any place in their religion. I don't care. Really don't care. Doesn't bother me in the least. Do I know that God's going to hold them accountable for that, for their despicable behavior, for creating the beast that God specifically identifies as the whore of Babylon? Hey, God's told us exactly what he's going to do to the Roman Catholic Church.
Well,
my animosity towards them would be a waste of time. But the fact is that just because I'm disgusted by them, as is God, the response isn't to go and hack the Pope to death.
Well, and that might be part of the thing for me, though, is he's already told me what's going to happen.
Right.
He said, told me.
Yeah.
And he's never told me, you know, hack people to death if they use my name.
They don't
use my name. Or if they,
right.
He's just said to me, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
You make sure you hold my name in high regard.
Right, right. And he wants us to speak out against.
Yeah, that's words.
Well, you know, words against the whore of Babylon, which is Roman Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
He wants us to speak out against. He wants us to speak out of a religion that is overtly satanic, Islam. I mean, Allah is Satan. He wants us to do that with our words. It's the way that he communicates, is with words. And because these religions are all satanic, it's not about words. It's about hacking people to death. You know, when God perpetrated the flood, the reason he perpetrated the flood, in his own explanation, was that because mankind had become so violent to his fellow man, God just couldn't bear it anymore. He just said that everybody is out hacking everybody else to death. I'm just disgusted by the whole lot of it. You know, why did I create this being to have a relationship with when everyone apart from 8 people are out brutalizing one another? And now you look at Islam. And all good Muslims are terrorists. They're brutal. And, you know, it's just like Muhammad. Today's Islamic terrorists, they don't go attack military installations. No, they suicide bomb civilians.
Mm-hmm. Usually their own people.
They cut off, they kidnap little girls and rape them. They always take the cowardly, disgusting, despicable position of using armed force against defenseless individuals. There's no courage in that. There's no honor in that. It just shows how warped, how terribly malignant all religion is, but particularly Islam. I was reading an article today in, I think it was the Washington Post, was doing a review of a fellow who had recently published a book about the complete and utter failures of American diplomacy and military interventionism, and said that, you know, America had made a shift between intervening in its economic interests. I mean, America, the empire of America is based upon its use of the military to compel the kind of trade arrangements that it desires. And it said that it went from that to nation building. And this fellow saying that trend to nation building has been wholly and completely counterproductive. That there isn't a single success with all of the military invasions that America has participated in, starting with and including the Vietnam War, but most especially the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And the writer goes on to say, he says, you know, that there was no chance of imposing democracy in Iraq because the culture was immunized against it. And he didn't say because Islam means submission, and that the Quran says there's no choice for Muslims. Didn't go that far, but that's what the Quran says. But the person who wrote the article says, you know, to demean an entire culture this way is to render the work meaningless. As if this individual had any clue as to what Islam was about. There's a reason that democracy will not work in an Islamic country. Muslims are incapable of operating in a democracy. The religion makes it impossible. Every good Muslim will tell you that. The Quran will tell you that. And you read this kind of rubbish from alleged journalists and publications like the Washington Post, and you just scratch your head and say, why do people pretend to be experts on things they know nothing about? Why are people wholly and completely incapable of being rational, of looking at the common denominator of the 50-some-odd Islamic countries and recognizing there's not a functional democracy in the bunch and that the vast preponderance of them are fascists? And they're all hugely behind the rest of the world in terms of any kind of freedoms and education and economic development. Or common decency, yes. That women are treated worse than America treated slaves back 200 years ago.
And even worse, the women here actually defend them.
You've got over 200 million little girls around the world today that have been sexually mutilated by their mothers. All Muslims. And no one seems to be able to make the connection of maybe their religion is the problem. Tens of thousands of little girls in Nigeria and Syria have been kidnapped, enslaved, turned into sex slaves by Islamic jihadists. They're auctioned off during Quran readings, justifying the practice. And no one wants to hold Islam accountable? What in the world has happened to people's ability to think, to be rational, to find the common denominator? You know, we can talk until we're blue in the face about what Yahweh has to say. But if the vast preponderance of people have, as it appears to be, have lost the ability to exercise good judgment, to be reasonable, to be rational, to be discerning, to be discriminating, to discern right from wrong, good from bad, then it's an utter waste of time. Yeah, we made the statement.
Somebody out there.
Yeah, well, there are a few. But that's kind of why he said it's one in a million.
Yeah.
Take advantage of his mercy.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. I want to go back to the previous verse what we were going to start with, and it reads as follows: "For in and by the window of my house," this is Yahweh speaking. This would be the home of the covenant. "Through my lattice," denoting the proper timing of things, "from a higher elevation, I looked down, and I saw with her." Her now is the whore. Yahweh identifies this whore, not with sex, with religion, with Babylon, with Satan, and most specifically, the beast that grew out of Imperial Rome, which is the largest religious institution on earth, the Roman Catholic Church. And he says, "I looked down and I saw with her," the whore, "where the simple-minded and the naive," ha, petty, "the easily deceived, malleable, and readily persuaded, the ignorant and the irrational, all with deficient judgment, the foolish." It's from Patah. Airheads who are gullible, simply enticed, and readily misled and betrayed. That is the common denominator of all religious individuals. They are ignorant and irrational. There isn't a single Muslim or Christian or evangelical atheist on the planet who is informed and rational. To be informed and rational about the religion of Christianity, atheism, secular humanism, and Islam is to be opposed to those religions. They are absolutely, irrefutably, undeniably false and counterproductive. And so, if you're dumb enough to play along with something that is obviously false and to believe it to be beneficial and true, then you're an airhead. That's what God is saying. That with the whore of religion, and that's specifically Roman Catholicism and therefore Christianity, the followers are thoughtless, simpletons, unthinking. Because if they were able to think, they wouldn't be Christians. They wouldn't be Muslims. I mean, the Quran is the worst book ever written. Muhammad, easily the most despicable man who ever lived.
No argument.
I mean, to be a woman and play religious dress-up as a Muslim, following the godly advice of a man who is a pedophile and rapist, a sexual pervert, shows that you are absolutely out of your ever-loving mind. That you might have a brain between your ears, but it's unused.
Sorry, don't mean to laugh.
Yeah, but it's true.
It's
true to play Islamic religious dress-up as a woman when the founder of the religion was a pedophile and rapist and sexual pervert. Terrorist and mass murderer and slave trader, you have to be out of your ever-loving mind.
Yeah.
But when you realize that Christianity's New Testament is completely and totally in conflict with Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and yet it claims to be inspired by the same God, and the primary author of the New Testament called God's Torah impotent, pornography, incapable of saving. When the person that they name themselves after, although it's a Greek title, Christian, said exactly the opposite. So you've got Yahusha, who they don't even know his name. They call him Jesus. There was no Jesus. Said not a single letter in any one of the words that comprise any of the statements in the totality of the Torah will be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist. And you've got Paul in his 13 letters annulling all of it. Every last word of it. And you're not capable of saying, wait a minute, those two things are not compatible. That's an irresolvable conflict. How can I call myself a Christian and oppose everything the man said? How am I to believe that God was incapable of creating a plan that would save me and that another pervert, Paul, who was by his own admission demon-possessed, was capable of it and was inspired by God to renounce everything that he had done to come up with an entirely different plan? And that's somehow credible to you? It's credible to you that your God died, that man was able to kill your God, and that's somehow a benefit to you? That God says, don't emulate the way of the Gentile nations, and yet you celebrate Easter and Christmas? Which are Babylonian holidays? You're out of your mind? That's what God says. So with her, a bunch of morons. God's got no interest, by the way, in morons. Now I want to be really careful here. My brother, mentally handicapped. I know a lot of many mentally handicapped men and women. They're the most likable, lovable individuals on the planet. They have an innate understanding, really, of what matters in life. God's not opposed to them. But those who are born with a capacity to think and who have just chosen not to, squandered it, he has no interest in. God is extraordinarily intellectual. He is brilliant. And you know something that people who like learning, who like to be inspired with new ideas, enjoy?
They enjoy the Torah.
Well, they also enjoy the company of others.
Others that do so as well.
Yeah, enjoy these things as well. And you know, if you've come to understand something, like, you know, I've studied Islam. I know the religion probably as well, if not better, than anyone alive. Really understand who Muhammad was.
No doubt.
And one of the very few people that's actually taken the Quran, put it in chronological order, and set it into the context of Muhammad's life using the two chronological depictions of Islam's creation, the Tariq history of Islam and the Sirah biography of Muhammad. And so I don't think there's anybody that understands Muhammad and Islam and Allah better than I do. I'd be surprised if there's anyone on the planet.
Well, especially with your backdrop in the Torah as well.
Yeah, and because now I know Hebrew and I know the Torah and I know that the Quran was actually written in Hebrew, not Arabic, and that its primary claim is that it confirms the Torah and was inspired by the same God when in fact it contradicts everything in the Torah. Yeah, I don't think there's anyone that understands the religion better than I do.
I think not.
But you know, when I talk to somebody who is reasonable and rational and is interested in learning and has done a bit of study, I find it stimulating. When I talk to somebody who just is thoughtless, you know, I don't care. I know a Muslim. They're a nice person and so forth. I just don't want to even contemplate any of this. And, you know, surely all Muslims aren't bad people. You talk to somebody that just is incapable of rational thought. And you get about a minute into that conversation, you say, what am I doing here? This is repulsive. You know, I think I'd rather have a conversation with a garden slug. I'm sure that's how God feels. So anyway, God says, with her, with the whore of religion, the simple-minded and naive. And then he says, and I made the connection, understanding and recognizing that among the children was a young man of deficient character, lacking judgment. Wow. So who do you think that young man might be? And if you were a Christian, wouldn't you say, boy, wait a minute. God is saying if I'm religious, I must be a moron. And he said that the antidote for moronicity, for being a moron, is to observe the Torah and particularly the portions of the Torah that speak about the conditions of the covenant. That's the first five statements in Proverbs 7 is you want to live?
Cool.
You want to have a productive life?
Cool there.
Observe the Torah. Observe my promises. Observe my testimony. Observe. Doesn't mean keep. Doesn't mean obey.
No.
It means to use your eyes to read. Your ears to listen. Your mind to contemplate what you see and what you hear. That's what observing means.
Mm-hmm. Then turn your way of thinking.
Right. And so that's the antidote for this, and so he's presented that. Now, you're a Christian, and you read this, and this is the young man. And then at the end of this psalm, the man's name is provided.
For those of you
who are slow on the uptake, the man's name is provided. And lo and behold, it's the author of your New Testament.
Yeah.
And you say, uh-oh,
yeah.
Houston, we have a problem.
Well, here's a clue. The young man lacking is Jesser.
Mm-hmm.
One of the meanings of Jesser is to decrease, diminish, become empty, made him lower, deprived, in quality and quality.
We're talking about lowly and little here, aren't we?
Yeah.
And Shaul, for those that don't know, was actually the birth name, the given name of the author of half the Christian New Testament.
Right.
In fact, he admits his name was Shaul, because twice during the encounter that he had on the road to Damascus, which was with Satan, by the way, Satan says, Shaul, Shaul, calls him out by name. So his name was Shaul. But he chose a Roman name. Now, according to God, when you read, now it doesn't matter if you're reading Revelation, or if you're reading Daniel, or you're reading Yashaya, Isaiah, or Jeremiah, the whore of Babylon is the birthplace of satanic religions like Christianity and Islam. God's very clear that Babylon evolved into Persia, and Persia evolved into Greece, and that Greece evolved into Imperial Rome, and Imperial Rome evolved into the beast of Roman Catholicism. So I put you in really quite a quandary here, because Paul chose a Roman name.
Mm-hmm. And rich.
Paulos. Yeah, and what does that Roman name mean?
It means lowly and little.
Yeah, and that's how he's just described this individual that has deficient character, isn't it?
Yes. Hundreds of years before he came on the scene.
Yeah, this would have been written 1,000 years before. This was written in all likelihood by Dode, right around 1000 BCE. And Paulos came on the scene around 36, maybe 37 CE. Yeah, 1,000 years. We'll be back after the break.